When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah, all right, and welcome to the 29th episode of the 2022 World Cup Daily Podcast, courtesy of What If Football via the Sports Social Podcast Network. And the semi-finals are all wrapped up. That means we've got two more matches to go, and we have got the showdown that we all, maybe most of us, wanted. Lionel Messi versus Kylian Mbappe in the final. Meanwhile, Group F buddies Morocco and Croatia will battle it out in the third, fourth place playoff. We've got a review of the France match, we've got previews looking forward, and we've got some awards to dish out, some alternative awards. So let's get stuck in. As I mentioned, we are here on the Sports Social Podcast every 5 a.m, as it were, right up until the morning after the World Cup final, rather. That is on the Sports Social Podcast Network, anywhere else where you get your podcast, as well as YouTube as well. And not only that, we are running right the way up until Friday with the World Cup Great Games podcast via Patreon, patreon.com/whatiffootball, just £1 a month to snap up all those Great Games podcasts that we have done throughout this World Cup. We're also on YouTube with Predictors Combined 11s right up until the very end, as well as our alternate football universes with the What If videos there. And we've also got some top 10s to dish out, which you'll probably see later on in the channel as well. We've also done Football Manager International Challenges. We've got a bit of a Christmas Football Manager treat, a nine-parter of an English persuasion to come as well. Keep your eyes peeled for that one after the World Cup is over. So without further ado, France 2, Morocco 0. And the changes were rung for both teams quite dramatically. Ibrahima Konate and Fofana were in for, Youssef Fofana was in for Dayot Upamecano, and Adrien Rabiot both suffering from illnesses. Meanwhile, Morocco's original team sheet at least had all the defence all in a line, and El Yamik was retained to make it a back five. Mazraoui returning, Naif Egwed returning as well, Roman Saïss somehow remaining in the team, but by halftime, all of those were gone. Aguero was a late omission. Roman Saïss really shouldn't have ever played, hence the back five. They would probably try to protect him a little bit. But the moment he got turned by Olivier Giroud, it's fairly obvious inside the first 18, 19 minutes that he could no way come on. Amala, who had had a pretty good World Cup for Morocco in central midfield, came on for Saïss midway through the first half, reverted to that 4-1-4-1, which has proven very, very successful for the Moroccans. And Atiya Allah came on for Nusser Mazraoui at half time. It was clear that the gamble hadn't paid off fitness wise, but you've got to say, World Cup semi final, it had to be done. And fair play to Walid Regragui for doing that, and for really having the balls to put a gamble in at such a big stage. Of course, it didn't pay off. We can sort of lambast the decision now, but you had to do it. You may only be there once in a lifetime. Morocco may never get to another World Cup semi-final again, and you may as well do it, is my opinion on that one anyway. So the question really was, obviously, Kylian Mbappe versus Achraf Hakimi is the heavyweight bout, but for me, the question was, would Griezmann be the difference maker again for France? And again, he is. I think The more we see France on the ball, the more we see Antoine Griezmann, the more I'm convinced that he should, he won't, but he should beat Lionel Messi for the Golden Ball, regardless of what happens on Sunday. But it's an easy decision for FIFA to give it to Lionel Messi, isn't it? So they will. That is almost set in stone, I would have thought, regardless of the result on Sunday in the final. Regardless, Griezmann was pivotal going forward in defence. He was integral for the breakthrough for the first goal. The lovely little turn to spin the three-man defence. He was finding himself going forward in those right half spaces all the time, continually. Of course, in this tournament, he's dropped deeper into more of an eight position to make it more of a lopsided 4-3-3 what France play. He's just absolutely superb. He's been the best performing France player by some distance, and that's a team including Kylian Mbappe and Olivier Giroud. He finds Kylian Mbappe with the ball, his shot's deflected wide to Theo Hernandez, who scores 1-0, 5th minute, and Morocco opened up as easy as that. Now, of course, the gamble of playing three largely unfit players, or rather, playing two, three were named, but two ended up on the pitch. That's probably where the gamble falls over there, unfortunately. And, Griezmann, France continued to give them huge problems. Griezmann was able to find Kylian Mbappe into the channels. He was doing so continually in the second half, where France really adopted the game plan which brought them to the semi-final after that quarter-final win over England, which was sit off, push them on the counter-attack, and that seemed to be France's best avenues. Really, Kylian Mbappe almost got on the end of a couple of through balls, and defensively for Griezmann, he was there when others simply weren't. He was stopping Achraf Hakimi from equalising just shy of the hour mark, and in otherwise, I felt poor French midfield on the night. Griezmann was clearly the beating heart of that midfield, but elsewhere, Olivier Giroud smashed a warning sign against the post early on. Again and again, you saw from France, they were a lot better direct route one. This was a route one ball from Ibrahima Konate, which found him, and which is where Roman Saiz came to the realisation that he was never going to last 25 minutes, never mind 90. And of course, Kylian Mbappe was dangerous on the counter, as if that needed pointing out. He had a chance cleared off the line. But apart from that, really, until a couple of nice little tricks and flicks and moments towards the end of the second half, it was another fairly quiet game for the old PSG inside forward there. Fofana, as I mentioned, I felt he was quite poor. Not as bad as the Tunisia game, where I felt he was horrific, but bad nonetheless. And I think France, if they are to beat Argentina, they may need Rabiot to come back in, unfortunately. I thought Theo Hernandez was a good going forward, called upon very rarely in the way that Deschamps set France up. Defensively, again, issues. Again, you'll probably see Messi peeling off to that right-hand side more often than not on Sunday, and rightly so, really, because it is probably the one area of weakness that France have. But in the middle, you've got some incredible talents. Whether or not Upamecano makes the final, you've got Konate in there, and Varane again was superb in the middle, put off En-Nesyri for a certain goal before the hour mark, and having conceded from opposition for the first time inside the 5th minute, the question really was upon Morocco: how could they play? They retained that five at the back for quite a lot of the game. Wing backs in Mazraoui and then Atiyah Alaa and then Hakimi on the right hand side. Their position allowed them naturally closer to goal, of course, and of course France pushing back and saying to Morocco, come on, you have the ball, let's see what you can do with it. And of course, this is probably the only game, I haven't seen the possession stats, but I'm fairly certain that Morocco will have edged that, probably for the first time in the tournament. They played football calmly, though. Nahi was probably Morocco's best player in the night. He curled one, which was saved. He was absolutely everywhere, wasn't he? Defensively and offensively, he should have really had a goal, but unfortunately it wasn't to be. And Morocco, the attacked in fits and starts, probably the safest way when you've got that counter-attacking threat that France pose. But all in all, good moves. They looked like looked right at home in a World Cup semi-final, looked at home in a World Cup knockout phase. Look at the calibre of teams they've beat: Spain, Portugal, Belgium, held Croatia. Now it's France, the only ones that can undo them, really. So you got to say, fantastic performance by Morocco. Yes, a 2-0 defeat. And in the end, it probably was more comfortable for France than their previous encounter. But nonetheless, Morocco tested them. Boufal was coming a bit more narrow. Ziyech and Hakimi were incredibly good linking in that right half space. And probably showed France more danger in the first 15 minutes than Croatia did to Argentina all of last night. And even when Morocco had to return to that 4-1-4-1, Hakimi retained his high positioning on the right. Ziyech would continue to drift in. Boufal would become more narrow as well as Etier Alla was bombing on a bit more left, a bit more on the left hand side, a lot more than Mazraoui was, probably because he's at full match fitness. And really, Morocco were dangerous all game. And Nasiri worked that channel on the right hand side as well in an attempt to create overloads and really target that left hand side, that weakness, that Theo Hernandez defensive weakness of France. The problem was French, they just played to invite this pressure on, as they did against England, came through that challenge largely unscathed. Despite a few wobbles. Here they were less wobbles, but Morocco had chances. Jules Koundé had to save one off the line. El Yamik had a dramatic overhead kick that Lloris just about gloved onto the post, and they were chances. I don't think the quality of chances were as good as England's in the quarterfinal, but nonetheless, Morocco gave them a stern test. Amala was good in breaking the lines. Amrabat was, of course, his absolute best. He absolutely destroyed Mbappe with a tackle in that left half space. Incredible tackle as it was as well, and they were causing big problems in the challenge going in the channel going forward really in the second half. Amala could have had a goal as well, and in the end Morocco rued missed opportunities. Mbappe created the chance for the second goal, a lovely little turn, give and go, beats five men in the space of about 10 yards if that, had a chance, but it was saved to Kolo Muani, and the Frankfurt forward taps in for his first international goal. Sometimes to find it, and maybe, even though he's a forward and a younger forward, he's young into his international career, but maybe shades of Lilian Thuram scoring his only two goals in international football in the 1998 semi-final. Speaking of Thuram, Marcus Thuram came on in a nice little bit of symmetry there. Maybe an omen, probably not, but we are all set for France versus Argentina and in the final, and Morocco, Croatia in the semi-final. And for Morocco, you've got to say pride for the Arab world, pride for Africa, the first African manager in Walid Regragui to make a World Cup quarterfinal, not even the semi-final, the quarterfinal. And an enormous tournament. And what's to say they can't repeat that feat in 2026? Because if you look at all their key players, Ziyech, Hakimi, even Amrabat in the middle, they're fairly young. They've got another World Cup in them as well. Started AFCON qualification off pretty brightly, will qualify for that, you'd expect. Started that off with two wins from two. So the future is bright for Moroccan football. Hopefully maybe add to that one AFCON they won in 1976. And for France, well, they've got the chance to become three-time champions of the world, as Didier Deschamps hopes to emulate Vittorio Pozzo, and Kylian Mbappe hopes to emulate Pelé, who is the only player to have won two World Cups younger than what Mbappe is right now. That's 23. So it's all an enticing prospect, a very enticing final. And the third, fourth place playoff should be kind of fun too. And speaking of those games, we'll preview them for you after this short break. And as well, in the third part of today's show, dish out some alternate awards, the best alternate 11, the all best alternate games as well. So stick around for that one. We'll be back in a couple of seconds. Welcome back. Yes, there are two matches of the 2022 FIFA World Cup remaining. The third, fourth place playoff, and of course the final. Let's start with some statistics for the playoff, because there's no real ramifications, really. Both Croatia and Morocco delighted to be there, I would imagine. Probably more so Morocco than Croatia. Of course, all these third place playoffs, slightly tinged with regret, slightly tinged with what could have been. And in terms of statistics, I'm not going to count the 1950 tournament, and there wasn't one in 1930, so there we are. So it's 19 third, fourth place playoffs that have been played in World Cup history, and the goal average is pretty kind to it, 3.84, although this appears to be, at least in the last two tournaments, trending beneath that anyway. In 13 of the 19 games, both teams have scored. 16 of those 19 games, surprisingly maybe, won by Europeans. There's been 9 European versus non-European fixtures, and of course 6 of those have been won by the European outfit there. There's always been a European team in these third, fourth place playoffs. Only one has gone to extra time, that is France 4, Belgium 2 in 1986. One has featured a team not from Europe or South America in 2002 when Turkey beat South Korea 3-2, so we will add to that little statistic. So in terms of this contest that we're going to see in 2022, I would expect a much changed team for Croatia. I would expect Morocco probably more so to go all out to earn bronze. And for both teams in the grand scheme of things, this is a ridiculous achievement. Yes, Croatia have got the pedigree, but to keep doing this, to reach semi-finals, they've reached 3 semi-finals. They've only really been able to qualify for international football tournaments since 1996, and they've only failed to qualify for 2 tournaments, Euro 2000 and 2010's FIFA World Cup. This is a ridiculous, ridiculous achievement for Croatia. I think it is almost akin to 2002 and 1994's matches, where you've got 2 of the so-called lesser nations, Turkey and South Korea, it was in 2002, and 1994 it was Sweden and Bulgaria. These games, it can often be desperate between 2 big teams who change much of the lineup and don't really want to be there. Nobody really wants to be there for this match, let's be honest. Sometimes, though, they are fun with plenty of goals. This could be fun with contrasting styles, but with the 2 teams on display here, I can't see many goals considering the teams playing. It was 0-0 in the group stages, you may remember. But I would expect Morocco to maybe to come out a little bit more, maybe Croatia will find their shooting boots, who knows, but it's got all the hallmarks of a 1 or 2 goal game, unfortunately. But we may see something completely different. Even in the lowest scoring tournaments, 2010 and 2006, Germany were both in the third, fourth place playoff for those tournaments, and they were high scoring affairs, so this could go against the grain and with the 2 teams here, and could be a high scoring contest, we just don't know yet, do we? But regardless, it should be one of the more fun playoff games, even if there aren't many goals. And we go on to the final now, which is between Argentina and France, in the battle of whoever wins this wins their 3rd World Cup, and therefore the ranking of the 4th best World Cup team behind Italy and Germany, who both have 4 World Cups, and of course the mighty Brazil, who have 5. Now, of course, there's numerous legacies which are about to be cemented, numerous careers about to be decided, and just Occam's razor it to hell, really. This could be, it feels like it's Lionel Messi's tournament. Of course, he has gone on record and saying this will be his last World Cup match. Of course, a match where he will become the record holder for the most World Cup appearances on 26, his semi-final against Croatia, tying Lothar Matthäus' record on 25 games. It feels as though it should be fitting for him to bow out on the international stage, perhaps even bow out in European football with a World Cup. Equally, maybe less so, depending on your allegiances, of course. I'm not about to go down some Messi versus Ronaldo rabbit hole, don't worry. It could be kind of fitting that neither Messi or Ronaldo win the World Cup, and the 2 greatest players that we will ever likely to see somehow escape their careers without touching that Jules Rimet trophy with a gold medal around their neck. Or we will be able to cement an altogether new legacy. Kylian Mbappe, he could be about to go on a Pelé-esque trajectory. We already know that he and Pelé share the fact that they've only been teenagers scoring in World Cup finals. The only teenagers to score in World Cup finals. Now, of course, Pelé didn't play any part in the 1962 final, 4 years after he won Brazil the 1958 World Cup, Brazil's first. Yes, it was that long ago. And Kylian Mbappe, well, this is his 2nd World Cup final in a row, just like it was Pelé's, but he's there and he can affect things. And perhaps we're about to see Mbappe become only the 2nd player to win a 3rd World Cup somewhere down the line. Maybe 2026, maybe 2030, maybe even 2034, who knows? We don't know how long we've got in this career for Mbappe. So we've got one legacy. It's about to be cemented. Of course, people are gonna make it Messi versus Mbappe. There are sideshow characters. There are an ensemble cast. We have Julian Alvarez and Alexis McAllister for Argentina, who are fantastic going forward. And of course, Christian Romero feels had a fantastic tournament. And Molina has come into things on the right-hand side of defence there, particularly going forward. Of course, for France, as English fans know all too well, Antoine Griezmann, Olivier Giroud, two players who we threatened would go under the radar against England, but came to the fore, of course. And there's, of course, tons of players. Diop Upamecano didn't have the best game against England, but he has had a fantastic tournament, in my opinion. Why he's in my team of the tournament. Maybe Rafael Varane, with a couple of good performances, has overturned that. But, of course, the managerial legacy. You've got Didier Deschamps, incredibly vast experience, gone to a European Championships final, two World Cup finals now. Could be about to emulate the great Vittorio Pozzo of Italian fame when he won the World Cups in 1934 and 1938. The only manager to win two World Cups. He could be about to do that, of course. And maybe for Lionel Scaloni, he could be about to start his own journey like that as well. The youngest manager at this World Cup, yet he is in a World Cup final. And it just goes to show it paid for Argentina to go with the so-called cheaper option after Jorge Sampaoli's sacking in 2018 and going down the route of somebody who, quote-unquote, just knows Argentina. And maybe we can take some help, some advice from that as England fans looking towards a potential new England manager, or rather sticking with our current one. Regardless, in terms of favourites, I would say France just about squeak it for me. Yes, Argentina have evolved, but both teams have suffered little wobbles here and there. Two group defeats. Argentina's seemed a little bit more terminal at the time in losing to Saudi Arabia on the opening night. But if you recall, during that podcast, I did say don't write them off last time they lost their opener. They got to the final, and here we are. Here we are some 3 weeks later. They lost their opener. They're in a final again. Of course, in 1990, when that was achieved, quote-unquote, I guess, by Argentina, they then went on to lose to European opposition. The great European opposition of their day, West Germany, who, of course, were in the previous final in 1986. A little bit different circumstances, I suppose. Argentina were the holders going into 1990, whereas here, France, their opponents are the holders. And again, France had a group loss. Yes, it didn't really particularly matter all that much in losing to Tunisia. They were never really likely to be unseated from top position in Group D. And both had their wobbles in quarterfinals. Argentina lost their heads thoroughly in the final 10 minutes against the Dutch. Meanwhile, France was second best against England. We've gone down that route before. Let's not hammer that point. France's injuries pre-tournament, you see all these long lists of injuries and how it might scupper their bid. In my opinion, I said it at the time, it may be a blessing in disguise. It's proven that, in my opinion. You got the likes of Presnel Kimpembe, Karim Benzema, Paul Pogba, and N'Golo Kante. Players who were fully part of the 2018 tournament. It's forced a transition for Didier Deschamps. Yes, they'll play in a similar way to how they did in 2018 when they, you know, went to a lopsided 4-2-3-1. They're doing the same thing here again. When they did dabble a little bit with a back three, Deschamps has returned to his winning formula, and I think that is why the forced transition, the return to tactics that people didn't see, that particular U-turn coming, I believe that is why we will see France pick up their third World Cup and create a little bit of history for all involved. And sorry, any Lionel Messi fans for that one. So now we've got 62 games. We've covered 62 games across this 30-odd days of World Cup action. Now it's time to relish in the World Cup that we've just seen. We'll have a proper review of the tournament on Sunday morning, and of course the World Cup final review on Monday. We've got a couple of rewinds as well in between, as always. But now we'll do some alternate awards. Yeah, we'll talk about the best of the best on Sunday's podcast. But here, I feel as though we should take a look at names, games that have been forgotten, really. So the alternate 11, yes, we all know the likes of Livakovic, Bono, you got Mbappe, Messi, etc. All the, you know, the heavy hitters. But I'll give you an alternate slant. Names that have been forgotten. I think we've got one quarterfinalist in here, and the rest are either got eliminated in the groups or eliminated in the last 16. So goalkeeper, yes, Poland weren't the best. I don't think they really deserved to be in the last 16, but Wojciech Szczesny, with his multiple penalty saves and multiple saves against Argentina, even though it was in vain, I feel as though he has to be in here. Yes, they are. It's probably a World Cup not really notable for its goalkeepers. Yes, at the top end with Livakovic, with Bono, Emi Martinez as well, mainly penalty exploits with those three men. I think they're at the front forerunners, really, for being one of the best goalkeepers. We'll find out, won't we, later on. You may see a couple of YouTube shorts going up about this very topic itself. But for the most part, you see Unai Simon very shaky with his feet, uncharacteristically from a Spanish perspective. Yogo Costa, I felt, was a bit wobbly as well. And goalkeepers of tournaments past who were very, very good, so Jordan Pickford, only were just good. So it's sort of, you fit into three categories, really, for me, in terms of, like, the front runners. In terms of a defence, we're playing with two left-backs, but it doesn't particularly matter. I've not been really blown away by the full-back quality at this tournament again, which is bizarre, really, because the tactical trend states, really, that full-backs should be in vogue, massively in vogue, but this is the defensiveness, this is the pragmatism of international football, I guess. I suppose we're kind of playing with three left-backs, in a way, with Pavlovic, but put that to one side, he can play centre-half as well. So we've got Kim Jin-soo. I'm going to play him on the right, why not? Left-back, he was utterly marauding down that left-hand side for South Korea. Big reason why Son Heung-min could cut inside. Perhaps not really a good reason why South Korea ended up qualifying for the group stage, but I felt he was one of their better performers. Of course, you'll laud Son Heung-min and the likes of Hwang Hee-chan, who got South Korea into the last 16, but Kim Jin-soo, I think, was South Korea's most prominent performer, most consistent performer as well. And then you've got Pavlovic for Serbia, who, if he had not gone injured in the second group game against Cameroon, we'll be talking about that one later, then Serbia, in my opinion, would have qualified for the last 16. As soon as he leaves that left half space against Cameroon at 3-1 up for the Europeans, Serbia just dissolve and it quickly goes to 3-3, and that alone, I feel, stresses his importance. I think he had a brilliant display against Brazil, where unfortunately some other members of his team crumbled against the weight of brilliant Brazil football in the first contest. And the third one was a bit transitional, a bit end-to-end in terms of Serbia-Switzerland, particularly in the first half. So I feel as though he's right in the mix there. And of course, the captain, maybe. But in terms of the best alternate centre-half, we've got Harry Suter, who was indomitable in that back line for Australia again and again. I would have liked to have seen him score from a set-piece, as he has done plenty of times for Australia. He went into this tournament with 6 goals from 10 international appearances, all from qualification. He's a centre-half, obviously 6'7" or 6'8" or whatever it is. I think he was just incredible. Unfortunately, Australia got knocked out in the last 16, but they put up a good fight. 6 points from the group stages. Nobody expected that. Had a pretty good showing against France until they crumbled a little bit towards the end of the first half there. And alongside him is his international teammate Behic, which was, again, another great left-back, likes of Kim Jin-soo, always getting forward, always a lot like most of the Australians. You could talk about Aaron Moy, who is a close second for my number 6 in this team. Always loved a tackle, dying for the shirt. They were absolutely excellent, Australia, and really the surprise packages, really, of the group stages. Of course, there are other surprise packages that went further than them, namely Morocco, obviously. But Australia, I think they did admirably well. Behic was an unsung hero from left back as well, and ended up getting them up the pitch quite well. So too did Suter with his long diagonal balls. So we go to midfield, we go to our only quarterfinalist in at the number 6 position, unsung because purely because of the front 5 that Brazil we're playing and it's Casemiro. Of course it's Casemiro. And was integral to Brazil's solidity somewhat going backwards, really. And just showed how fantastic he was. He was a fantastic goal against Switzerland to win that in the end. And yes, of course, people look to Vinicius Jr., to Richarlison, who the latter for a brief period between group stage and last 16, I felt, there's a runaway group golden boot winner there. And obviously, never came to pass, unfortunately. But Casemiro, fantastic in between the lines for Brazil. And alongside Lucas Paquetá, I felt had a pretty good foundation for Brazil going forward. Elsewhere, we have got Mohamed Kudus in a little bit of a more reserved position of number 8. And he did play number 10. But I feel as though him in a number 8 box-to-box, I feel as though creative box-to-box player as well would be fantastic. This is incredibly incredibly attacking team. We've got Ritsu Doan alongside him as well. Dragged Japan out of numerous pickles against Germany, against Spain. And for me, until Morocco sort of thundered through the knockout phase and beating the teams that they did, Japan were exceptional, really. They sprung numerous surprises and Doan was at the heart of it, certainly in front of goal. Incredible amount of energy and was one of the better Japanese players, usually utilised from the bench, but that was no pejorative, really. He was just a brilliant squad player and was a big difference, really, alongside a Japanese player, which we'll talk about later on, in terms of getting them winning the group as well, in a group containing Spain and Germany. Absolutely miraculous. In terms of Mohamed Kudus, really unfortunate for Ghana to be going out of the groups. I felt he was by far and away Ghana's best player in the tournament. Showed his qualities from a creative standpoint in that number 10 position. I just felt he was the one that got Ghana going in numerous occasions. And if they got through to the last 16, maybe with a kind draw, they could have perhaps done something. And Kudus would have been at the heart of it. Big things expected of him in the next 12 to 18 months. Yes, the Ajax maybe might find a place in the Premier League. A lot of suitors after him before the World Cup. That will only be magnified after it. And moving forward into the front three, we have got, I'm pretty sure, an all eliminated. Oh, we've got Takumi Asano, who was eliminated at the last 16. But we've got either side of him, Tejon Buchanan and Gonzalo Plata, both out at the group stages. Now, Tejon Buchanan, we all knew about the virtues of Jonathan David, of Alphonso Davies for Canada, but Tejon Buchanan was probably the most consistent performer for Canada in a group, really, where somehow they did not get their first World Cup point. Of course, they lost three in 1986, they lost three here, but really their performances were almost verging on underachieving to not get out of the group at a time. Obviously, you've got Croatia and Morocco in there who end up semi-finalists. So kind of unfortunate that they end up in the group that they're in. Maybe put them in, I don't know, Group C alongside Mexico and Poland. I would have had Canada ahead of Mexico and Poland any day, the way they played, of course. Superb performances against Belgium, which I think Buchanan was man of the match for that. He certainly was in my eyes anyway. They were brilliant going forward. Of course, Jonathan David, I felt, underperformed a little bit. And you've got Alphonso Davies, Kyle Larin as well, all played somewhat of their part going forward. But Tejon Buchanan, his tirelessness in the middle of the park to get up and down that right-hand side, sometimes left-hand side, entirely flexible, and plays his football for Club Bruges. Of course, a Champions League knockout phase game to come for him, but may find himself with a lot of suitors going forward. Gonzalo Plata, yes, Ener Valencia took the plaudits for the first couple of games. Of course, scored most of the goals for Ecuador in this tournament, but I felt Gonzalo Plata, particularly against the Netherlands, was out of this world. He was very unfortunate to hit the bar against the Dutch, which would have changed the entire dichotomy of the tournament. If you think about it, Ecuador could have been on for they'd have qualified from the second game, but they would have been on for a group win there, potential quarterfinal meeting with Argentina, which would have been a spicy affair, all South American affair, and how things change. It's really very unfortunate for him, because I felt he had a pretty good World Cup. It was going under the radar because a lot of the players in an Ecuadorian shirt, Moises Caicedo, Pervis Estupiñán, Enner Valencia, down that left-hand side, were gaining all the plaudits. But on the right-hand side, Gonzalo Plata, I felt, had a pretty good World Cup as well. And finally, Asano, who grabbed the winning goal against Germany in what looked to be maybe a standalone performance, but Asano was brilliant. Every time, again, like Ritsu Doan, came off the bench and just lit up every game that he was in. He was just incredible. And that is our alternate 11. We've got Szczesny, Kim Jin-soo, Pavlovic, Suter, Behic, Casemiro, Kudus, Doan, Buchanan, Asano and Plata. And in terms of our alternate games, well, we've covered few of them going into the alternate 11 there, but yes, we all remember the stunning comebacks from Japan. They all remember again, from Saudi Arabia as well against Argentina. And of course, the high quality affairs from like Spain versus Germany, England versus France, Netherlands versus Argentina was dramatic to say the least. But some alternative games here. Switzerland versus Cameroon in the group stage is a fascinating game. Two sides oscillating for control. Cameroon showed their hands. They showed that they were very, very good themselves. But Switzerland, Braylon Bolo, they just about snuck it. And Cameroon really were one of the entertainers at this World Cup. Obviously, the win over Brazil. But then the 3-3 against Serbia, end-to-end. More questionable Cameroonian defence on that one, but a stunning comeback as well from 3-1 down against a team that many people tipped to go through, me included. I felt they could even get as far as the quarterfinals. Obviously, that came to a crushing end in the second half in that game. South Korea, Ghana as well, 3-2 for Ghana. Another incredible game of football, really. Topsy-turvy, one of them on a similar lines to Cameroon, Serbia. And if this ended 3-3 with the late South Korean barrage in the second half, this could have been, again, like Cameroon, Serbia, should have been 3-3, really. But again, Mohamed Kudus earlier, mentioned him earlier, starred in this game. Scored the winning goal, I believe, and incredible end-to-end fixture, which it didn't seem to have all that promise, especially once Ghana got 2-0 ahead. You struggled to see why South Korea were going with this, and again, after this game, you struggled to see how they would get out of the group, and somehow, some way they did. And moving away from the topsy-turvy end-to-end all drama games, we've got a couple of hard luck tales, really, four, five, maybe, really, here. We've got Poland versus Saudi Arabia, 2-0. A lot of hard luck tales for the Saudis here. Missed penalty. They were the better team as well up to that point. And Aldosari, unfortunately, missed that, having been the hero against Argentina. And then Poland picked Saudi Arabia apart. Zielinski scored. Robert Lewandowski was gift-wrapped his first World Cup goal. And 2-0, it was an uphill challenge for Saudi Arabia to qualify for the last 16, where it almost looked nailed on for a time. And then Belgium versus Canada. We mentioned it earlier. 1-0 for Belgium. They scored with one of their few shots one of their few shots until maybe the last 30 minutes of their tournament, when they were unable to beat Croatia, Batshuayi scoring, and Canada really, really should have won that. Again, another missed penalty in there for Alphonso Davies. And this was still at a time where Canada was striving for their first World Cup goal. Of course, they would get it inside about a few minutes against Croatia in the following game. But unfortunately for Canada, yeah, another hard luck tale. So too, Wales against Iran, last minute winners, ramifications for the group, all the drama that came with it. This was the do or die group for Wales, really. And Iran emotions going into this game, of course, with the not singing of the national anthem against England. They bounce back here, and once this came to pass, his 2-0 win, 98th minute, 101st minute, I think, winning goals, red card for Wayne Hennessy chucked in at the time. That was the first red card of the tournament. And you felt Iran could probably get something against USA, and if they did do that, then they'd be through. Unfortunately, wouldn't come to pass. And Netherlands-Ecuador, we mentioned as well. I think this was the game where Ecuador came alive. Yes, they beat Qatar fairly comfortably. They didn't really need to do anything to beat Qatar comfortably, as Senegal and the Netherlands also felt moving forward in the second and third games. Ecuador incredibly unfortunate to not win this game. They were the better team by quite some distance. Gonzalo Plata hitting the bar, as I mentioned. And unfortunately, we were unable to get the win, which would have seen them through prematurely. And probably, if you think about the way the group went, probably would have had Netherlands dangling on towards the end and maybe could have had Ecuador going through as group winners. And another futile push for the last 16, Mexico 2, Saudi Arabia 1. For 10 minutes, this was going to be settled by yellow cards until Aldosari just ghosted through and scored a consolation goal for the Saudis. Mexico, you've got to say, didn't really deserve it. He didn't really deserve it. Perhaps the team that did deserve to go through from the last 16 was Saudi Arabia after their exploits in the first game. But Mexico and Poland really flattered to deceive. They were pretty pointless, really, in the grand scheme of things. And this game, of course, ended Mexico's long run that stretches back to 1994 of getting to the last 16 but failing to reach that fifth match. And failing to reach a fifth match was Spain, of course. It was a great game. It was fascinating, nil-nil tactical. Morocco, this was the birth of Morocco. If you didn't believe them beforehand, then you certainly did after this game. Defensively, incredibly astute, nil-nil, and fully deserving of the penalty shootout victory. Didn't even concede in the shootout. That's quite ridiculous, really. And yes, semi-finalists and brilliant all-round team, really. And Spain probably didn't deserve to go through. Unai Simon, I didn't think, was all that great in nets. Of course, it could have been also different if Pablo Sarabia hit the inside of the post and his 121st minute shot went in. One of the what-ifs that I'm sure I'll be working on in the next 12 months, that is for sure. Well, that is all we've got time for on today's show. We've got a couple of rewinds for you to tide you over on Friday and Saturday, and we'll be back on Sunday with the final preview. We'll review the tournament so far and take a look at some of the best moments from the tournament and try to find its place in the history of World Cups. Quite an odd one, obviously, for fairly obvious reasons. And of course, we'll be ending this World Cup Daily podcast series on Monday with a review of the final, France versus Argentina. Thank you very much for listening, for following us throughout this tournament. Until next time, see thee. Podcast Network.